Hello and welcome to Film Wonk. This is Glenn. I'm here with Daniel.
Hello.
And we are here this fine evening to talk about Michael Bay's new film, Transformers Dark of the Moon, right?
Yes, Dark Side of the Moon.
Transformers 3, the sequel to Transformers Revenge of the Fallen and Transformers. Daniel, you and I saw Transformers Revenge of the Fallen at the IMAX in Seattle. It was Pride Week. It was a massive gay pride festival happening in the in the vicinity, and that was sort of the backdrop of us standing in line for this richly anticipated movie. And it was pretty awful.
It's one of the worst movies I can recall seeing.
Well, you say that, but I remember very little of the plot details of Transformers.
There wasn't much of a plot other than the racist robots.
And the robot with giant swinging balls.
Yeah, I mean, it was a blur. That movie was just a blur.
Well, here's what I thought of when I saw the trailer for this new film, Transformers Dark of the Moon. And we start with a shot of Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin bouncing around on the moon. They cross over the edge of a crater, and we see a big crashed alien ship there. And it occurs to me, we saw exactly the same trailer for Transformers 2, only it was Mars instead of the moon. And it occurs to me, upon thinking back even further, that the plot of this film is almost identical to the plot of Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. There are these Transformers buried on another celestial body nearby, and there's somebody trying to wake them up. That's kind of it.
Well, when you have a movie with such a little plot as Transformers 2 and 3, you repeat it. Everyone just wants to see the robots fight. Come on, Glenn. What are you trying to do to me, man? Plot, characters.
Well, this is actually a new dimension.
Dialogue.
thank you. This is actually a new dimension of robots fighting because Michael Bay, in fact, shot this movie in 3D. This is the first movie that he has ever shot in 3D, and we saw it in IMAX 3D on opening night. So, mm-hmm. I guess we're going to get right into our discussion of Transformers: Dark of the Moon. Despite our obvious opinion about its plot and the story, we're going to try to avoid spoiling major plot developments until we specifically indicate the spoiler section. So let's get right into it. I think the first thing I have to say about this movie was I thought it looked gorgeous.
Yeah, definitely. They incorporated the 3D well.
Yeah.
It wasn't the cheesy, it's going to hit you in the face 3D. But it was
I have a hard time being convinced by quote-unquote live-action 3D. Like even the even in Avatar, I mean, the sequences in which almost everything you see on screen is CG were far more convincing than the stuff that was shot on sets and with people. But I think that many of the all CG kind of sequences in Transformers, wherein we have robots fighting in front of a destroyed cityscape, I won't say which city, but it's in the trailer, odds are probably most, if not all, of what we see on screen is not real. But it's shot and rendered in a way that is meant to look very real life, and the illusion of depth that was created there was fantastic. I mean, you could really feel these visual effects. They had weight. They had a presence in this physical world. Which I think was really all they needed. I mean, when they hit each other, you needed to feel that. It needed to feel right. Like something real, and I think that was what he accomplished here. And that's really all this movie needed to do.
Yeah, it was a clear. It clearly improved on the second movie. You know, the second movie, I couldn't tell who was fighting who or what was going on in the
fighting.
Absolutely,
there were some
sequences.
Serious problems with action staging in that film. I mean, it was impossible to tell where anything was in relation to anything else. And the story was so muddled that it was impossible to tell why anyone was fighting.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, so they're in Egypt. They're fighting. I don't know who's winning. I think the Autobots. Oh, wait. No, here comes the Decepticon. Okay, is the fight over? Oh, Megan Fox is there. All right.
Yeah,
this movie.
This film almost feels like a 2.5-hour apology for the second film. I mean, it rehashes the plot very similarly, but it addresses almost all of the problems that I had with Revenge of the Fallen. And on top of that, it is a legitimately good action film. It is nonstop action. It is one massive action set piece after another, and I was completely enthralled by it. It definitely borrows pretty heavily from other movies. The sequence with the destroyed city that we're talking about basically incorporates the plot of Cloverfield in like that little half-hour section.
It was essentially if Cloverfield had more than one monster.
if Cloverfield had all the monsters. Now, there were a couple of villains in this movie, but I think in order to talk about them, we're going to have to get into spoilers because, in fact, the identities of the villains are, in fact, spoilers. So let's just hold off on that for now. But let's talk about the casting here. Now, in my review of Thor, the discussion that I had with Nick on that, I referred to the Transformers problem. Now, I'll go ahead and define that since you weren't there for that one. Essentially, in a battle between massive, powerful aliens that are just completely beyond us, humans are not that important. They are not consequential in any way. They don't pose any threat to the aliens. Really, we should just see a movie about the aliens battling it out. Maybe see some human collateral damage, but that's it. Like, there's no reason to focus on human beings as characters. That was a big complaint I had about the first two Transformers movies, but I think that I think this movie tried very hard to address that. It tried to give the human beings something important to do, and I think it at least partially succeeded. I mean, we have a scene in which, first of all, it allowed the humans to participate meaningfully in the action sequences, whereas the first movie just had one tiny Transformer, just so the humans would have something to do, like have one little tiny Transformer for them to fight with shotguns. That was what the first movie kind of threw them a bone. The second one, it was like, we need the humans to get the MacGuffin from point A to point B. Okay. In this movie, we actually had humans convincingly fighting and taking down robots.
For one scene, though.
For one scene, but it was this very cleverly staged action scene. I won't say how they did it, but it's all these different elements coming together. All this stunt work and weaponry and all these very just clever uses of military hardware and of action staging. I thought it was fantastic.
It was good. I mean, largely the humans are lost in the movie. Like, they don't really do very much. They really aren't that important. Shia LaBeouf, I mean,
what about our boy Shia LaBeouf?
He tries hard. I will give him that. He's good at what he does, but there really wasn't much for him to do in this movie.
He's sort of got an inferiority complex at the beginning of this movie. I mean, first of all, he's unemployed.
Right.
And he can't tell anybody that he saved the world twice, and all he really wants is a job. And I have to say, ordinarily, I have been put off by Shia LaBeouf in movies. My reaction to him in this movie was, aw. you just want to give him a big hug. Like, he did save our lives twice. Give him a little respect.
I mean, I've always liked him as an actor. I mean,
he's essentially this generation's Bruce Willis, and that's that pains me to say that almost. But
say it again, but a little louder this time.
Well, it's tricky because he takes on sort of a James Bond role in casting, insofar as his Bond girl has been replaced in this movie. Megan right. Fox is no more.
In real life as well.
Well, what do we make of the actress who has replaced her? Rosie Huntington-Whiteley is
her name. She's not an actress by trade. I believe she's a model.
Correct, but I think Megan Fox sort of came up in modeling as well, and right. kind of went from there. I think my reaction to her was, well, first of all, I think it's fairly obvious in the scripting of this character that the decision to recast Megan Fox was not reflected in the script too terribly. Like, I actually thought that she was the same character when we first met her on screen. She's got a British accent. And I was like, are they even going to try and explain away how she got a British accent between those two movies? Nope. But then they quickly explain, okay, it's a different girl. And they explain Megan Fox's absence away respectably enough. She dumped him. It's over. This is his new girlfriend, who is also a supermodel.
Right. Who has a crazy, awesome job. She's very important, has tons of money, and an adorable British accent.
Well, she has a very important job, but the important job is in like collectible classic cars,
right.
Which makes me think this was just meant to be the Megan Fox character because she was always a bit of a gearhead in the previous That's movies
true.
And so forth. They just kind of changed her name and went from there. But I have to say, I'm going to try very hard to find a way to talk about this character without sounding extremely sexist because that is not my intent.
But it will be mine.
However, I think I have to say I almost would have preferred Megan Fox in this role, and here's why. You might recall a movie we saw called Jennifer's Body.
Yes, a great movie.
Which I actually reviewed for the site. You can find my review at filmwalk.net. And in it, I basically say that there is no one better suited for this role than Megan Fox. And I think that can also be said of this character in these Transformers films. The character of Sam Witwicky's girlfriend is so insubstantial and has so little reason to be there and has so little reason to be in a relationship with Sam that basically the actress who plays her Without having just the right blend of sleaziness and sexiness that is required for that sort of role, basically comes off as just a mannequin on the screen, and I think that was what Miss Huntington Whiteley came off as in this movie.
There's one scene, towards the end.
But don't say what's happening during the scene, but feel free to describe it.
Okay, so things are happening in the background.
Yeah, some shit is exploding in the background.
No, that's fair to say. You said spoilers. Things are happening in the background that would normally divert your attention to those things.
It's true.
But our girl, our Rosie, is staring off into the distance, looking as vapid as can be.
That's true. There's almost no expression on her face. I mean, and like, you sort of feel like maybe she's being hit by a blast of heat from behind or something.
I thought
like
maybe
that,
someone sucked out her soul for just a moment, and she was literally a hollow shell of being.
That's what it looked like, yeah. And it was like the... It's unfortunate because guys can get away with that. Guys can get away with that as long as they're walking away slowly from an explosion. But she was standing there, staring off into the distance. It wasn't pleasant to behold.
I don't know why that scene was in the film.
We can talk about what happens immediately after that scene, because that is the closest thing to a character moment that we get from Carly.
I have lots of gripes with that scene.
But we'll save that for spoilers. But let's just say, without going into who they are, what did you think of the villains in this film?
They're better than your standard fare. I mean, let's
just call him the human villain.
The human villain was interesting, I thought. I think he was better than a cookie cutter villain. He had a Quisling vibe to him. Yeah, definitely. So essentially a collaborator. And I don't know, like, I kind of liked him.
I think we can't talk about these guys too much more without getting into spoilers. So let's just go ahead and do that.
Things happen in this movie. Terrible things.
Suffice to say, this is not a movie that is exactly plot driven, and you would not be missing out on much by continuing to listen to our discussion. So anyway, from this point on, spoilers for Transformers: The Dark of the Moon. So the two villains in this film are Patrick Dempsey, who plays Carly's boss. The collector of these classic cars. And, you know, at the very least, we know he's a jerk because he's potentially encroaching on our boy's girlfriend. But we didn't really... I thought the twist of him being an actual villain kind of came out of fucking nowhere.
He wasn't just, like, a villain. He was the lead collaborator.
Yeah, which I think was a bit of poor scripting. Like, I'm not sure I bought him suddenly being the villain, but once we learned he was the villain, I think Patrick Dempsey brought a lot to this role. And I liked him as a character.
I did, too. Like, I would have liked to see his resolution with our boy go a little bit differently.
That's true. What we needed was a true incarnation of Shia LaBeouf as this generation's Bruce Willis. He needed... an action movie moment. He needed to shout a catchphrase and throw that fucker off a building.
Yeah, instead,
he hits him with something.
Gets electrocuted and falls, I think.
Yeah, and then we should have talked about this before we got into spoilers, but there are so many, what did we call it, Bumblebee ex machina moments. Yes. in this film, wherein either Bumblebee or Optimus does this a couple times as well, come out of nowhere.
Absolutely
and save
nowhere.
Their lives. At just the right moment, and you know, after a while, once you finally realize that none of it matters, which actually takes a surprisingly long bit of time to happen, but
it's a long movie.
It's okay. I didn't mind it. I thought it was poor, lazy script writing, but
yeah, essentially, it's, you know, in case there are any novelists out there, it's when you write a character in a corner and you say, shoot, there's no way that he would reasonably survive whatever is befalling him. Well, we'll just have somebody swoop in at the last second and kind of save his ass.
What I loved was that was the epitome of the humans being useless characters, because we have this scene wherein the Army Rangers, or whatever those guys are, apologies to any actual Army Rangers out there for me probably grossly misquoting what unit these guys are with, but the military guys.
The Nest, I think, is what they're called.
Nest, yeah, that's right. Yeah. And I think Tyrese was one of them. And a few guys from the previous films, they make their way up this tower that is half collapsed, and this is straight out of Cloverfield.
Oh yeah.
Somehow they make it up to the top floor of this building. We don't actually see how they've managed it, but somehow they get up there, and all they have to do is fire off their rocket launcher at one of these pylons that's going to call all the Transformers back to Earth.
Well, it's going to bring their world.
It's going to bring Cybertron to it.
Yeah,
we'll get to that in a moment.
Which makes no sense.
but that was the one thing they had to do, was fire this rocket, and they get noticed immediately by the Decepticons, and they have... they have this moment where they can either hide or just, you know, fire it off and reap the consequences. And then they decide to hide. So you figure, okay, the Decepticons are going to pass, and then they're going to make their chance. But no, that doesn't happen. They immediately get found out. And then that huge worm transformer comes out of nowhere and just, like, rips apart the entire building while they're still in it.
And somehow doesn't topple the building.
You know, I don't care. It was a very fun set piece. I'll go with it. Also, it was magnificently rendered. I thought it looked fantastic.
I mean, if those buildings were around 9/11, there's no way they collapse. A giant worm ripped apart the building and it did not collapse, Glenn.
Anyway. So let's talk about the villain's plan. Now, the villain is this other Prime. Epsilon Prime? What was it? Well, whatever. It was Leonard fucking Nimoy. That's who it was.
Leonard Prime.
Yes, it was Leonard Prime. And we even got a little bit of what I'm calling a geek shout out, but honestly I felt pandered to, where he actually says the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, which really makes no sense even in terms of his plan, because he's talking about enslaving the entire human race to save probably a few thousand Transformers. Which, it's sort of the opposite of what his plan is.
When we get to that part, I would like to have a comment on that.
Let's do it. So his plan is he wants to use this teleporter thing to bring the entire planet of Cybertron
into
Earth's orbit. Now, I'm going to go ahead and say, let's overlook the part where everyone on Earth immediately dies.
Okay.
Because of the gravitational impact of bringing this massive object into our atmosphere. Because that is a movie that is a trope that every disaster movie, including several made by Michael Bay, have fallen prey to and ignored. So that's fine.
Physics is hard.
Yeah. Near Earth, massive object. Okay, I'll allow it. But okay. But what was their plan?
So their plan was to enslave the human race and make them work for them and rebuild their planet.
Yep.
Now, but to do that, they first kill off a lot of humans. Now, the gestation period of a human is 9 months.
Is it? Okay.
Yes, in case you didn't know. And a machine can work 24 hours a day rest. And a human can...
Humans need food, don't they?
Water, food,
and
air.
And agriculture,
things.
Whereas the Transformers seem to only need energon.
Yeah, so I don't really understand how their plan would work.
Well, let's take it a step further. Like, Cybertron, as we see it, doesn't have an atmosphere. Like, how are the humans going to survive? Like, you would enslave half the human population, and the other half would have to work overtime just to keep that half alive and working,
and
building spacesuits for them.
And the half that's working, what's their productivity level going to be, really? Because they have to be training on whatever they're building, first off, when the machines can just do it themselves.
Well, also, like, the Cybertron that they partially bring into Earth's atmosphere doesn't look really any different from the one that we saw. Like, what repairs need to be done exactly? Like, they just need to make more Transformers, right?
Yeah, they say they're gods, you know, in their world. Gods of what? They're all Transformers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like that. I saw there was actually an Xbox game that came out in between these last two Transformers films. It's Transformers War for Cybertron. And I saw some of the gameplay footage. And you play as a Transformer. But, like, if you're playing as a robot, it doesn't really matter that your robot is, you know, the size of a giant relative to a human being if all the other robots on screen are also that size. Like, what you see is a human-sized robot on screen. Like, everything is scaled up. It doesn't matter. So, their plan didn't make really any sense. I thought they were planning on, like, the way Nimoy told it, I thought they were planning on turning Earth into Cybertron, or, like, taking over the Earth, building the Earth into this big like, technological monstrosity, and then just killing off all the human beings, stripping it of its natural resources, turning the Earth into what we saw Cybertron as, which I guess that would even make more sense as a plan.
Yeah, if Earth had the necessary resources to rebuild, you know.
Well, in any case, I think this film... Pretty obviously, it encourages what I would call fanboy quibbling, but I don't think either one of us could be considered fanboys for this
or
franchise.
Or fans or boys.
Indeed. Yeah. But I think the sort of quibbling that it encourages is like reality quibbling. But here's what I found myself doing as I watched this movie. I found myself realizing how overwhelmingly stupid what I was watching on screen was and accepting it and moving on, because it was also... It was incredibly cool. It was Michael Bay playing with his toys on screen, just like, you know, smashing them together and making little explosion sounds, and it was wondrous to behold. I was very happy with it.
You know, I wouldn't go quite that far. I thought it was, I agree in a lot of ways. I I did turn off my brain for it. I mean, we were surrounded by, you know, teenagers, and people were just looking for that summer blockbuster, you know, mega film. And I guess I appreciated just how much work went into creating this world and the Transformers, how unique each Transformer is and what they can do. Like, there's clearly a lot of thought in the design for that, and I appreciate that.
I would agree with you. I think the craftsmanship of this film is something to admire, but I think at the same time, this is not a film that I'll find myself thinking about for long periods. I'm not sure it's a film that I'll ever find myself wanting to watch again.
It was too long, to be honest.
Yeah, definitely. It had that sort of Bad Boys 2 vibe where it needed to cut about a half hour from it, but you're not really sure what half hour they could have cut.
I mean, there were, I think, a few scenes that easily could have been cut. There are a few characters that could have used less time.
Yeah.
I think our conspiracy theorist friend doesn't really do anything in the movie.
Indeed.
You know, the CIA director?
Played by Frances McDormand, I believe.
I mean, what does she really do for the movie?
Well, they provide hacking as magic support in the third act, I believe.
I guess.
They're in Chicago. That bridge needs to be raised, and freaking Alan Tudyk shows up out of nowhere as this master master hacker from some part of Scandinavia, I guess. I'm not sure what accent he was doing there, but he can hack into anything. He can hack into a cell phone camera and show us what's on it. He can hack into a bridge and make it raise. He can hack into your fucking skull. I mean,
he hacked into my pants.
Honestly, I'm kind of surprised that, like, we're fighting a war against giant robots. Why couldn't he hack into one of those, you know?
Right, or no one thought of EMPs.
I guess they must have secured their Wi-Fi network, but...
Probably.
It's funny because we have a lengthy period in which humans are getting their asses kicked by the Transformers, and then at a certain point the tide starts to turn, and it's not because the Autobots are doing anything in particular. I mean, they're fighting and they're killing Transformers in a localized sort of manner, but at the same time, like, military hardware has shown up, like ships offshore are firing big old harpoon missiles and taking out Transformers.
Yeah, it seems like the missiles are working, but the
missiles are working fine.
The fire jets are just getting down.
Exactly, so we're changing tactics. Like, you almost feel like we could probably take these guys out if we had enough time and we're willing to commit enough resources to it.
If we're willing to lose that many people.
That's true. Chicago's fucked. It's done.
Yeah.
And in much the same way as... this is yet another movie that it's aping is War of the Worlds. I mean, we see a scene in which the Decepticons are basically just killing people in the streets, and they're shooting them, and they're exploding into puffs of dust as they're being shot.
You know, Michael Bay clearly likes to, directly steal from things that he seems to enjoy.
Indeed.
And, hey, we all do it, so...
Well, actually, come to think of it, Spielberg was an executive producer on this film, so like we saw recently in Super 8, you didn't see it, but like others of us saw recently in Super 8, when Spielberg produces something, his hand can definitely be seen on it, and that was a film that was explicitly trying to be a Spielberg film. This one just had a few Spielberg sort of touches to it.
Before we wrap up, our Rosie talks to...
talks to Megatron.
Megatron, that's it.
And this is yet another area in which it was exactly the same as Transformers 2. Megatron is supposed to be this badass villain. And,
with a cowl, no
and
less.
He just gets immediately made the bitch of whatever the villain of this film is. And so, you know, she walks up to him, and rather than just swatting her like the bug that she is,
he listens to her,
and she's like, "You're gonna be Epsilon's bitch, you're gonna be Nimoy's bitch after this, because he was the one who led this invasion."
Appeals to his pride.
You know what my major problem with this scene was? We don't really know who Carly is. I mean, this was a scene that was written for Megan Fox, and Megan Fox and Megatron have interacted before, I'm guessing. I don't really remember it that well.
Why was she there? Why wasn't she immediately killed? Or after she talks her game and convinces Megatron to, go after, Leonard Prime, why didn't he just kill her then?
He's like, you make an interesting point, but your voice is annoying, so I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, and then,
actually, I, that is unfair. I actually thought that her voice was one of the best parts of her character.
Yep. I agree. It's probably the only part that showed any character.
Yeah, I think that her character did not need to be in this movie. I think that is the kindest thing to say about
it. It gave Shia LaBeouf something to fight for, because humanity itself is not enough.
Yeah, I get it. But honestly, I felt like when it tried to encapsulate the entire plot of Cloverfield into that one half-hour period, like we mentioned, It literally has that, where like his girlfriend is in a building and he needs to get to that building, and in order to do so, he needs to actively enter the danger zone.
Oh my god! Yeah, it's exactly like
Cloverfield. It is exactly Cloverfield.
Not nearly as cool.
And he's got like an entire fucking army unit there to back him up.
While that scene is cool, Cloverfield was a lot better. There was a lot more tension there in Cloverfield than there was, you know, in Transformers 3.
Yeah, when the soldiers are hiding out in that glass building and the Transformers are out, or the Decepticons are outside flying around and they're poking their heads, and there was no tension in that scene whatsoever.
No.
The reason for that was it didn't matter how that scene ended. There was only one way it was going to end, and that was with gunfire and explosions.
Well, even so, you know the people who are going to die are going to be people you don't know.
Yeah, it's not going to be Tyrese. It's not going to be Shia LaBeouf.
And it's not going to be that other Marine guy, that the guy who's kind of like the commander of Nest.
Yes, that guy who we don't know.
Yeah.
Not
going to be him.
Yeah.
But everyone else is expendable.
Yeah, pretty much.
And really, you're not watching the movie really care about characters. You're watching to see stuff explode and you know, robots go at it.
Well, I have to say, after two straight movies with Transformers that I was clearly meant to know who they were, maybe from the old TV series or something, so that when they die, it's supposed to be a big deal.
I could care less.
I had a hard time differentiating them, except for basically Optimus and Bumblebee and maybe Megatron, and that's it. But I think this movie did an okay job of differentiating Transformers. And actually, after three straight movies of this sort of weird relationship between Sam and his car and Bumblebee, who still can't talk except through radio signals.
Which is totally lame.
Which is dumb. But yeah, anyway. We get this scene wherein Bumblebee is put on his knees and nearly executed. Now, Optimus jumping in out of nowhere and saving him was kind of lame, just like every other time that Bumblebee did the same thing during the film. But still, like, I found myself caring that Sam cared that Bumblebee was about to die.
See, and I was waiting for someone to jump in to save Bumblebee.
I don't know. I thought they might. I thought they might actually go there. But of course, what we see instead is a scene that actually felt like something out of Peter Jackson's King Kong, where Bumblebee not only is able to escape, but he also just beats the shit out of all of his captors. And then what does he do? He shoves the gun up inside one of the other one's chest cavity and then blows his head off. It was just this awesome moment of badassery, but, you know, it was a giant robot, so it was...
So, whatever.
Whatever. Okay, he has feats of superhuman or super robot strength.
Good for it.
We are approaching a half hour, so I feel like I may need to pare this discussion down a little bit.
Probably all the parts post, where we just like saying, you know what, that was cool, but lame.
Yeah, and I think that's probably a fair assessment of this film. It was cool, but lame. I was completely enthralled by it. I found it completely entertaining.
It was too long,
yes,
but it was very enjoyable.
It was, and I think that... I think it was a good use of 3D. I think I found it unfortunate that it suffered from the problem that IMAX 3D always suffers from, which it was a little dark in playback, and I found that I had the same reaction to it as I did at least one of the screenings of Avatar that I saw in 3D, where I was like, these colors are supposed to be popping off the screen, they're supposed to be bright and colorful and joyous, and it was all kind of flat and dark,
a little muted,
which for something that conveyed the depth so well, I was a little disappointed to see. But I think that was a problem with projection, and I think that's a problem that's plaguing a lot of 3D films, which is why 3D as an upsell has kind of reached its high. It's in decline, I think that's safe to say.
Yeah.
So
it's a gimmick.
Well, I think that with that, that brings us to the end of our discussion of Transformers: Dark of the Moon. But I have to say that one thing that I really enjoyed about this film that we haven't talked about yet was its historical integration.
Yes.
The way it brought in elements of the space program and the moon landing and things like
that. If there was more of that in the film and less just fly out balls in the wall action, I actually probably would have liked it a little bit more than I did.
Well, we had X-Men First Class recently, which actually set itself during the Cuban Missile Crisis, and I really like that aspect of it. But the part where it actually involves historical figures, the closest thing we get to that in X-Men First Class is we see all of them watching Kennedy's famous Cuban Missile Crisis speech. But they actually edited that speech in the movie to serve the plot. They changed it around a little bit. Whereas in this, we actually have something more like Forrest Gump, where we have actors portraying these historical figures and mixed in with bits of actual footage of them, depicting Kennedy, Nixon, Obama, and it was all done pretty well, except for the actor who played Kennedy. They left him on screen for entirely too long.
Yeah, you're like, wait, that's not.
Nope, doesn't look like him at all. but you know, out of focus Nixon in the background, I liked it.
Out of focus Obama,
probably a real shot of Obama, and then we cut to his, you know, the back of his head looking away,
right,
out of focus. That all worked for me.
Yeah, that's fine.
So,
anyway, so who should see this movie, Glenn?
Indeed, I think that I think anybody who can properly be represented by the sentiment "Michael Bay, I wish I knew how to quit you," which I shamelessly lifted from the Slash Film cast, but I dare say it is exactly how I feel about Michael Bay. To this day, I will defend Armageddon as a legitimately good film. Bad Boys 2 is one of the best action movies ever made. Michael Bay knows exactly what he wants to make, and it's not something that everybody likes, but it is something that I thoroughly enjoy every time it comes on screen. And even in a bad movie, it still manages to be a form of action direction that I just find completely compelling. He is a master of disaster, in the same way as Irwin Allen and Roland Emmerich. He destroys things on screen, and he does it in beautiful ways.
Yeah, I would have to agree for the most part. I would say it's our first real big blockbuster of the summer.
I'm not sure I would agree with that, but continue.
I would, since I say it. I would say, go see it, bring some friends. Don't just turn your brain off. Don't try to think of the nonsensical stuff. Just have fun seeing, you know, shit get destroyed.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think this movie had a better story than it needed to. I think it had better villains than it needed to.
Yes.
There's a lot here for you, even if you don't turn your brain off.
But I would recommend doing
that. Plenty to enjoy. By the way, best summer action movie so far, not this, Fast 5, if you can believe it.
Didn't see it because all those Fast and the Furious movies, dumb as shit.
Fair enough. And with that,
My car's faster than your car. Whoop de you.
Well, they're actually rebranding them as heist films now.
Oh, okay. My car's faster I get away than your car.
that brings us to the end of our discussion of Transformers Dark of the Moon. Thank you for visiting at filmwalk.net, and have a good night.
See ya.